Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh yeah, we started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote that song. David wrote the lyrics, except for one, Solartopia. I wrote that, and Pete Seeger did the music. It's such a joy to get to listen to them every week here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show at PRN. Thank you guys in New York for doing the engineering. And we got some great guests and some great things to talk about. Amanda Robertson, are you with us?
I am here.
You are here. And I am
here. I am here.
I'm in California and you're in North Carolina. So the here is a little different. The here is relative.
The sun is going down over here. It's still up over there.
It certainly is. Absolutely. It's a beautiful day here in sunny LA, which actually has fall. Amazing. It's my second fall in New York, in LA, but I didn't notice it last year. The leaves actually turn in Los Angeles, ladies and gentlemen, and the weather in Los Angeles is not the weather in Miami. Let's put it that way. Joel Siegel, are you with us? You're in North Carolina too, aren't you?
Happy holidays, my brother. Good to hear your voice.
likewise. And Merry Xmas, as Donald Trump would say. Russell Green, you're out here with me in Southern California, aren't you?
Slugo Wasserman, it's an honor to be with you, but I am in Ohio at the moment.
No, you're not.
Yes.
You're not in Ohio.
I am.
Where in Ohio are you?
I'm on the border of Pennsylvania and Ohio, Sharon, Pennsylvania.
All right.
Hermitage.
Okay, well, unbelievable. So, listen, we got a ton to talk about. We're going to focus with you wonderful people on the Green New Deal, on health care for all, and a whole bunch of other issues. I do want to start off by saying, before I lose track, I just got a piece posted at progressive.org, the wonderful progressive magazine dating back to 1909. Their website has put up a piece that I just wrote called "The Green New Deal Promises Peace and Progress. Will Nuclear Advocates Undermine It?" Otherwise known as "Will the Corporate Democrats Nuke the Green New Deal?" And we are seeing an incredible backlash, conservatism from Pelosi and Schumer and the other corporate Democrats. I mean, what is it about the 1930s that they missed? You know, the Democratic Party became the party of the people in 1930s with Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt, and, you know, ruled the country, or at least was the people's party of the country for the next 50 years. It's not rocket science. We have a floundering economy, to say the least, a crashing empire. We're on the brink of probably the worst collapse, economic collapse in human history. If you combine the floundering stock market, the overblown housing market, $1.5 trillion in student debt, God knows how, well, you know how much in medical debt, we're going to talk about that, an ecological crisis, and a complete fascist moron in the White House. I mean, talk about a perfect storm, and yet the corporate Democrats can't even endorse the obvious way out of here. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. Alexandria, you want to comment on that? Amanda, Alexandria, I'm looking at a picture.
We know why you're
Ocasio Cortez. So,
yeah,
Amanda, sorry about
right now. It'd be great to have her on the call along with us to talk about the Green New Deal, I'm sure. But no, I agree. I think Joel sent out an article earlier today to me by David Roberts, who I just love, and he wrote an article on Vox, and that's exactly what he said. He's like, Democrats have long accepted the dire truth about climate change, you know, and what this foretells for all life on the planet, what it has been foretelling for all life on the planet, as we lose species and species and species, but they still do not have a plan. And when it comes to, you know, even trying to create a select committee to form the Green New Deal, they still push against this. So I don't know. My belief is that a plan is going to come, and I know that our organization is working with a lot of others, and I know Joel can speak on that. But I do think it's coming, and I hear your frustration, and I'm with you and so many, you know, hundreds of thousands and millions of others in the United States and beyond that are just flummoxed.
It's just unbelievable. So listen, now, for those of you listening, we're going to provide a little menu here. We are going to talk about the Green New Deal with these amazing experts. And then we're going to, Amanda and Joel and Russell, and then we're going to segue in and talk about healthcare for all and then a few other things. I will say, again, the article on this is just posted at progressive.org, which I love. It's a great website. Basically, will the corporate nukes, corporate Dems nuke the Green New Deal? Because one of the things you got to worry about is I've got these clowns running around saying nuclear energy is clean. I mean, give me a break. And then we're going to talk about universal health care for all and extinguishing medical debt and things like that. So let's jump in. Right. And by the way, I also had another piece recently at Reader Supported News. I'm writing every week now on the countdown to Trump's departure. And I have joined a pool of friends of mine. We're all putting in $10, and we're betting on whoever wins against the whole pool when Trump is leaving. And I have put down my $10 on April 22nd, 2019, the upcoming Earth Day. And so we'll see if that holds. We can talk about that later at the end of the show.
Mr. Person.
Well, listen, somebody else.
Mr.
I was with. Well, I was with last night. I was with the great Ed Asner, and he bet on April 1st. I think he did it just to undercut me. So there you go. You know, let's say, let's hope. Anyway, as my mother used to say, from your mouth to God's ear. Let's talk about the Green New Deal. Russell Green, aptly named, you are at the forefront of this. You're working with the Sunrise Movement. And with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's, you are Joel Siegel. Russell, tell us, give us the rundown now. What's the reality of the Green New Deal?
Well, Harvey, thank you for having me and for your setup. I mean, when I hear you ask the question, do the Dems not get it? I'm assuming, knowing you, that that's a rhetorical question to which you believe, of course, they don't. And I would note that I was a delegate to the Democratic National Convention representing Senator Sanders. And there were moments at that convention where I felt so unsure of where I was. I was not at a place that I felt was home. The Democratic Party did not feel like home to me. We were cheering for military intervention. We were cheering for just moderate corporate Democratic policy. And I said to Joel afterwards and to Reverend Yearwood, we were discussing the pathway forward. And I said, I think we should start a new party that really understands the crisis of the climate emergency. And Joel said, and Reverend Yearwood said, the more radical thing to do is transform the Democratic Party. And I think that's what the Green New Deal actually, to me, most importantly represents, is a pathway, a beginning, as to how to make that transformation real. So to me, this was a remarkable success. I'm not surprised in any way. A bit disappointed because the momentum seemed to be building in a way where it might have been possible. But I believe this is more than we actually set out believing we would be able to do in this shorter period of time. If you would have told me after the IPCC report came out a few months ago that we would now be talking about climate in 10-year terms, we would be talking about it as an intersectional issue, we're talking about it in terms of social justice and economic justice, and that would now be the frame from which everything else would be discussed. I would have told you I didn't see how we were going to do that. So to me, I think this is a play to the inauguration of January 20th, 2021, where the climate emergency must take focus from every perspective, all citizens, all candidates, all voters, all sectors of society understand that if we do not mobilize to address the climate emergency at a scale not seen since World War II, with a moral center not seen since the civil rights movement, with the type of innovative belief that we saw during the Apollo moonshot, if all of those things don't become the center of what we believe is possible and necessary, we're not going to be able to address the reality of the climate emergency. So to me, we have a remarkable breakthrough from which we can build upon, and I think that's our work moving into the next 2 years.
Well, hard for me to follow that one, Joel Siegel. Thank you, Russell Green. It's brilliant and beautiful, as always. Joel Siegel, you want to kick in?
Yeah. Excuse my voice. There must be a climate change-induced cold front that came into Charlotte, North Carolina. But I'm honored to be on this call with Amanda Robertson, who is one of the single most important 100% clean renewable energy leaders, green job leaders in all of North Carolina. But especially, you know, my brother Russell Green, who left an unbelievably lucrative job as executive vice president of the Cheesecake Factory because climate change is something that is, you know, is in his heart. And he has just been a force both within working with Bernie Sanders in every segment of the campaign. And thank God we have both of them on the call. As someone who worked in Congress, I was an activist who worked for an activist member. And my perspective is I really think Martin Luther King set the standard for how to change the Democratic Party, and that's build the largest possible multiracial coalition, introduce the 64 and 65 Civil Rights Act, and then just organize from the inside and outside until you pass that legislation. And this Green New Deal and the Sunrise Movement and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and what Bernie Sanders has been doing and what Russell's been doing and what Amanda's been doing in North Carolina is really the beginning of a 21st century civil rights movement around a complete transition of our energy sector, where we tell the utility and energy companies that we don't want them burning fossil fuels anymore. We're demanding that they use clean, renewable energy, solar, geothermal. But where I'm very optimistic is there are so many organizations and individuals, and Russell has been one of the most important leaders in all this. We are coming together, and we're going to get the Green New Deal passed. I just came back from Washington, D.C., and I met with Grijalva senior staffers. I met with Frank Pallone personally, met with the executive director of the Progressive Caucus, and you know, I just said, we need to start hearings right away. I told Pallone the same thing and congressional briefings. And I'll close by saying that we have to do a massive education of the Congress, of the American people. We cannot do that unless we have a coordinated campaign where all the groups who are working together on this Green New Deal have got to come together in some kind of a leadership conference. We have to raise a few million dollars, hire organizers, because I did lead the Medicare for All movement and the universal health care effort, was one of the leaders of the global HIV/AIDS movement in Congress, and I remember all the hard work it took, but we did have an inside-outside movement. We were coordinated. We had a beloved community, and we got some victories, and I think we're poised to do the same, and I think we got great leaders to do that. Two of them are on this phone right now.
Amanda? Amanda Robertson?
Yes.
So what do you want to add?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Harvey. I had a real hard time hearing Joel. I think, I don't know, maybe
sometimes
Charlotte's a little bit farther from Pittsburgh, North Carolina than L.A. is from here. So I apologize, Joel. I know he was losing his voice a bit today, too. So I can't really speak to what Joel was talking about, unfortunately, because I couldn't hear him. But I think one of the big things I'm excited about here in North Carolina is the work that we've been doing. Of course, Joel is the executive director of the group that I'm co-chair of, North Carolina Climate Solutions Coalition. And I think that we're in a critical spot here in North Carolina because we are really working, it feels like an uphill battle against what many argue is the largest energy company in the United States and by some standards even the largest in the world, and that's Duke Energy. And the work that Joel has been doing with many, many others in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is the home base of Duke Energy, has been an exemplar of where we need to go. I know that had a lot to do with the way that he worked in the healthcare industry when he was working in Congress, and he's bringing that home to the work we're doing in North Carolina, and then we're going to spin that back out on the national scene on climate change. But You know, in Charlotte, we had a huge uphill battle because that is the home of Duke. And as, you know, politics works even on the local level, sometimes you have, you know, these big energy conglomerates and big corporate entities that infect our politics. Certainly here in the United States as elsewhere, but we've got to fix that, and we need to start, you know, really working hard to fix that on the grassroots level the way they did in Charlotte. And that was by bringing all sorts of people, different organizations. They had civic groups and businesses and scientists and, you know, and then just regular citizens got together and worked on a coalition in Charlotte. I know Joel wants to share, you know, what that process looked like, but we've got to do that in the very challenging communities across our state. We've been bringing on, well, we've got 18 communities, including counties and some big cities, Durham County, which is where, you know, Duke University is. So it's a big, big county. We've got Wake County has adopted 100% clean energy resolution. Boone adopted it 2 years ago. The city of Asheville has adopted 100% clean energy resolution. So 18 towns and counties across the state, and they are all sharing in this voice. But it's got to be bigger. It's got to be lots bigger if we're going to be pushing a huge energy company like Duke. And the reason North Carolina is so important and critical for the rest of the state, the rest of the country, is because if we can turn North Carolina and Duke Energy can start switching, they make this example for the rest of the nation of where energy must go, where it has to go. So I think it's pivotal. And it stands in with everything else we need to be doing and what the Green New Deal needs to be and creating, you know, a bill that has to be written that has at its heart what is in this document, the draft of this document thus far. And that's going to be critical. But again, you know, which is what's in this document describing where we need to be and organizing a select committee, whether that comes to pass or not, those people need to have a seat at the table. We've got to build this very strong group, this group that works in solidarity, and that's got to happen really, really fast. It's got to be, you know, 2019, we've got to start pulling this group together, and I think that it's going to happen with the many states that are already on board, and we'll push out to, you know, a global voice when we replace Donald Trump, and I hope you're right. I hope this happens in April. I'd love to see that happen this year.
Yeah, well, it'll be Earth Day, so just get your champagne ready.
Okay,
there.
Okay, all right.
And your legal marijuana. So let's talk about some specifics here with the Green New Deal. I'm looking at a quote from Thomas Friedman. Wikipedia is crediting Thomas Friedman with an early use of the term Green New Deal. Actually, the first time I read the term Green New Deal was in an article by Mark Hirschgard a long time ago. And here is where we get into the weeds here, or as opposed to the weed. This is Thomas Friedman of the New York Times. We only green the world. We change the very nature of the electricity grid, moving it away from dirty coal or oil to clean coal and renewables. I mean, come on. What, you know, he's saying we're going to have a Green New Deal that's going to include clean coal, which doesn't exist. You know, it's like saying safe nuclear power plants. I mean, you know, so we obviously have our work cut out for us to make sure this thing doesn't get backslid into total nonsense. I mean, somebody's going to advocate the Green New Deal and include clean coal in the Green New Deal. And as my article talks about it, the progressive today, nuclear power, which, you know, there's a big difference between renewable energy and clean energy. Because
it's like natural gas, though, Harvey. I mean, natural gas. They like to throw that word natural in front of it. But, you know, it's 80 to 100 times more harmful than what, you know, burning coal can be if you look at it over, you know, 10, 20 years. So, yeah. Solid language.
Yeah. I mean, the only natural gas I know about is when I eat badly, you know. So, but
and everybody that. Who's ever dined with you has experienced that. I would I would say that.
So, go ahead, Russell Green, please. I mean, we're going to have to be very careful here, obviously, because a lot of people are going to throw in to the so-called Green New Deal, stuff that's totally not green. Number one being nuclear power. And, you know, that's the point of my article today. They're going to try and tell us, people on the Hill, people like Clinton Ryan, for God's sakes, the so-called progressive congressman from northern Ohio, signed a letter with two other progressive Democratic congresspeople, Marcia Fudge and Marcy Kaptur, saying that they got to keep the nuclear plants open because they're green. And so this started
an article that I hope to finish next week called Shades of Green, which sort of goes at what I think you're touching on, but there's so many layers of this. On the last Sunrise organizing call, they mentioned that one of the concerns, the last two calls, was around the co-opting of the Green New Deal. Andrew Cuomo proposed a 100% Green New Deal for electricity by 2045. So it's taking the idea and now reducing it both in scale, intention, timeline, et cetera. So we're going to have to be very careful about that. And I think that's going to be one of our first charges is to enumerate the ideas that are required for any Green New Deal to be taken seriously as the Green New Deal as presented here, and hold it as a proxy of sorts against anything that is proposed that is beneath that as the standard. Same thing, you know, California was very excited to pass 100% renewable energy by 2045 in the electricity sector. Problem mm-hmm. with that, not only in, as a, just a piece of legislation is not up to the task of what it is that we're confronting, is that it offers, I think, a risk, or pardon me, it offers a pathway to complacency within the Democratic Party, because the progressives begin to believe, well, compared to the Republicans, that we acknowledge that we believe in science, yet then we sign up for legislative solutions that actually don't take science seriously. They're not evidence-based. They're gradualist. And I think part of them, our task here is to create thresholds for legislation, for candidate endorsements, et cetera, that are of a shared language of what we mean when we say Green New Deal. I think we're also going to be challenged, we already are, to expand perhaps even what's been proposed so far to go further in some of its enumerations, like you're pointing to with nuclear energy, as Medea Benjamin pointed to in a request that she made publicly on militarism. The environmental justice movement has been very open and forthright in bringing more specifics that they believe should be also considered. So I think we have to move intentionally but quickly so that we can find an alignment that allows us to draw that kind of line.
Right. So I had Medea Benjamin and Jody Evans, the founders of Code Pink, on the show last week, and they very clearly, you know, they raised another dimension of the Green New Deal, which is how it's going to be funded. And they, you know, there's all these various tax proposals, but the bottom line is the Code Pink and the rest of us in the peace movement want it funded with money taken out of the military, especially mm-hmm. since the military is the number one, the American military, the Imperial Starfleet here is the most, the largest source of global warming and pollution in the world. It's a very important point to make here. Let me jump in real quick here. Russell, you raised the point, and Joel, we talked to it as well. Do we need, what should we do? Should we form a new party, or should we try and flip the Democrats? And I would submit that we have to do both. You know, the Green New Deal actually has been sustained, the idea has been sustained and refined a lot by the Green Party. We do have a Green Party. We had a candidate, Joe Stein, who, in my opinion, is the only true hero to emerge in the 2016 election. And I want to throw this in real quick. It's important. You know, Jill, unlike the Clinton campaign, Jill went into Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania and challenged the vote count in those three states, which was clearly corrupted. And had Clinton gotten a fair vote count in those three states, Donald Trump would not be president. And Jill raised $7 million on the Internet, and she went in and did the legal work with my co-conspirator, Bob Fitrakis, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, and in Pennsylvania, and found ample reason to overturn all three states. And she has just won in the last couple of weeks a major court decision that will require a new generation of voting machines and voting procedures in Pennsylvania that will actually result, I know this is hard to believe, in a true small D Democratic vote count in those states. Now, in terms of a separate party, Russell, especially you mentioned this, and we do have a separate party. The Green Party is, you know, it's got its challenges. I mean, any party is going to have its challenges. And the Green New Deal is, they've been carrying the water on the Green New Deal. So I don't see how we proceed without both an independent party and the attempt to overturn the corporate control of the Democratic Party. Seems to me we have to do both. Do you want to comment on that, and then Amanda, and then Joel?
I need to think on that, Harvey. You know, it's I love the expansiveness of the idea. I have to say my head has been down in this notion of transforming the Democratic Party, that there is no time. It seems so contained by time. And so in my mind, it's all about this acceleration of a transformation of narrative and an understanding of what is required by all parties, that we're changing the way the world understands the climate emergency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amanda?
I have to agree with Russell. I think for me, it's not so much a party issue, though I think we've got to really focus and put a lot of emphasis on reinventing the Democratic Party. And I think that's where the Sunrise Movement is going. They're really pushing very hard on the Democratic Party, trying to push some influence there. And I think that the stronger way forward, in my opinion, which is my very humble opinion, because you all are far more educated in these areas than I am, but I feel as though I would hesitate to try and push for another party while also trying to push to really change our path in the area of climate change. And I think that the areas that Russell brought on earlier, you know, the ideas of social justice and economic justice, these all go, you know, hand in hand when we're talking about climate change. They have to go hand in hand, and it all has to be thought of simultaneously. And that's a big, tall order. So I think what may emerge, my thought, just talking here, is that we may end up pulling out a Green Party and a very new kind of party, whether that continues to be labeled Democratic Party, I don't know.
Joel Siegel?
Well, I'm looking forward to the day where you moderate a panel in the U.S. Congress on this issue, which I'm gonna set up as soon as this call's over. There already is a Green Party within the U.S. Congress. It's called the Progressive Caucus, and I was very fortunate to be the senior advisor on Medicare for All. That's the largest caucus in the United States Congress. The way we got Medicare for All to be the number one priority issue during around 2009 was we had an inside-outside strategy. We had the Progressive Caucus leading the Medicare for All battle, and then we had about 1,000 organizations on the outside. And the only reason why we couldn't get it passed really was because Senator Baucus took it off the table in the Senate because we became too powerful. So then you have the Congressional Black Caucus. So between the Black Caucus and the Progressive Caucus, that's the, you know, the largest caucus in Congress. So we're going to need to work with Grijalva. And I think what Grijalva needs to do, and those of us who are working on this Green New Deal, I just met with his chief of staff and his senior staffers today. We need to have a meeting with Grijalva and bring in Ocasio-Cortez, bring in the Progressive Caucus, and just say, look, we want hearings on the Green New Deal. We want legislation in the House and Senate. We want to hold hearings are very important. Congressional briefings are very important. And as a movement, we have to demand that the bill gets a hearing and that we want it passed in the next 2 years so that, as Russell's been saying, this has to be the litmus test of any candidate who's running for president, has to be a supporter of the Green New Deal. We're running out of time. 95% of the scientists know we're running out of the time. We know that we've got 10 years to really be well on our way on the transition, but where I live in North Carolina, Duke Energy wants to build a 600-mile underground frac gas pipeline, which will destroy our planet. And we're moving backwards, not forwards, but I will use the word solidarity. We need 100% clean energy, green jobs, solidarity movement, but as soon as possible, the grassroots are going to have a meeting, form some kind of a coalition around the Green New Deal, and go right into the Progressive Caucus and start meeting with them and get a strategy for passage of a Green New Deal bill that is progressive. I don't think we have to build a new party. I think it's already there. It's called the Progressive Caucus.
Well, whatever it is, I think we have to be very careful because, as we know, the term Green New Deal is going to be subjected to all sorts of co-optation and dilution and misdirection. And so there has to be an organization of some kind, independent of the Democratic Party. I mean, I'm all for transforming the Democratic Party, but it's not going to happen if we don't have an independent force. They will not, you can work within the Democratic Party. You have to work within the Democratic Party, but you also have to have a safe haven where people don't consider clean coal to be part of the Green New Deal. The Thomas Friedmans of the world are just going to bore us to death and slip in all this. You know, it was going to be clean coal, safe nuclear, ecological fracked gas. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the whole deal. Go ahead, please.
I have a couple of thoughts on that, Harvey. Well, first of all, I think you know that I was a platform committee member representing Senator Sanders in Orlando, July 2016, and I passed one amendment, one platform amendment that declared that we were in a climate emergency, called upon the United States to lead a national and international mobilization to address the climate emergency on a scale not seen since World War II. The second part of it was that within the 100 days of the inauguration, the president, Clinton, at that point, we were thinking first woman president, Mother Nature's last chance, would hold the summit of the world's great scientists, engineers, philosophers, indigenous leaders, environmental justice leaders, and create a pathway mm-hmm. forward. Obviously, that's not how this played out. However, it's still the position of the Democratic Party until the next Democratic Party platform. So I think some version of that would be important for leaders to put together, where we actually, really, if you think about what the Select Committee's intention was to investigate research and draft a plan, and then from the plan, a legislative version of how to do it that addressed the reality of what the research and the investigation showed was necessary. So we don't only have that Select Committee as a pathway to do that. So I think a summit outlined as similar to what I just outlined could work. And Sunrise has floated the idea of a People's Committee for a Green New Deal. And I think that mm-hmm. that will be emerging. I also know that there is going to be Green New Deal legislation introduced into both chambers of Congress middle of January, end of January. And I believe, I hope, that they will be as ambitious, if not more ambitious, than even what was enumerated in the Green New Deal. So I think we're going to have many places that we can point to and draw lines and hold that solidarity that Jill's pointing to as a baseline from which everything else can be measured.
Amanda?
Yeah, I think that Russell's got it right. I think that we've got to pull together a larger movement that really runs and is sort of coinciding while we're pushing the Democratic Party, and it's got to be a driver behind what it is we're going to do. And a point that was made earlier was that we don't let other individual organizations dilute the goals. We can't let them dilute the goals of the Green New Deal and the vision that what this is. So we want to be careful that we don't start splitting hairs, but we've also got to be careful that things that come apart that want other people, other organizations want to add, well, this needs to be a part of it, and this needs to be a part of it. We have to very quickly and very solidly affirm what this is that we are, what this is that we, the Green New Deal, those that are behind it, are about. And that talks to, well, where does nuclear come in? Does it talk about existing nuclear that's functioning in a way that is not falling down and endangering? And that's a word that I don't want to get into in this conversation. But you hear me. We don't need to be building and funding any new nuclear plant. So where does that fall, and what is it we put down, and what are we going to agree to? One thing we ran across in Charlotte, for instance, was Duke Energy wanted to put limiting carbon or limited carbon. They didn't want to say zero. They just said
carbon.
Limited carbon production. So people are thinking, oh, great, we're not going to have a lot of CO2 going out in the atmosphere. But that's not true, of course, because natural gas produces limited carbon, CO2 is actually producing quite a bit of methane. So we have to be very clear in what we're defining as clean, renewable energy and be very specific about those definitions and make sure we get that out very early on. we've got to pull together a coalition very quickly. Who are these leaders and who's going to do this? And we need to be able to get behind a group. Is it going to be Sunrise? Is it going to be a group that's going to be pulling together, you know, federal leaders and state leaders and tribal nations and businesses, and who's going to be pulling all of these folks back? And I think that our organization, you know, with Joel at its head, because he's very tuned in with, you know, with Congress and how Congress operates, and, you know, has written bills before, so he's functional in those categories and can really work in those channels. He can help bring us on board and help tie some of these other groups together. But it's got to be, you know, obviously more than just us and leaders in a lot of different areas. So I have confidence. I know we can do this. We can do this.
Of course we can, because our survival depends on it. Very good, Amanda. Let me throw something out here, being a hardliner, you know, on energy. There's basically wind, there's solar, there's batteries, and there's LED, or increased efficiency. Those are the four essential elements. Renewable energy, which really is limited to wind and solar. I mean, there's some forms of biomass here and there that you can get away with. Geothermal is questionable under some circumstances, but generally, all right.
What about hydro?
We're not going to be building any. There's not going to be any new hydro. I don't see any new hydro, and a lot of the old hydro has got to come down because of its ecological damage. There is some hydro that seems to be working okay, and that the shall we say the Earth has adjusted to. There's absolutely no room for nuclear. New nuclear is completely out, to including Volcker, which has got to shut the two reactors.
Agreed.
In Georgia. You know. There's nothing about new nuclear that's worth discussing. It's completely off the table. And then the shutdown of the existing reactors has to proceed very rapidly. Now, I did have, and I talked to Russell about this, a brief conversation by an email with someone from Sunrise. And there was a notion that we can support continued operation of nuclear where they're going to replace it with, if they're going to replace it with fossil. And that's just not part of the discussion. When nuclear shuts down, it's replaced by renewables. It has to be. We've already got that agreement from PG&E, of all people, in California on Diablo Canyon. So the presumption has to be that the old nuclear reactors, which are increasingly dangerous, need to shut as fast as possible, and they need to be replaced with renewables, and there's no in-between. There's no replacing nuclear with fossil fuels. The battery storage is a big deal because you still hear these clowns saying that, well, the wind doesn't shine, blow all the time and the sun doesn't shine. But we have battery technology, which is moving ahead extremely rapidly, very efficiently. It has some issues of its own, especially when you get into lithium iodide, but lithium ions. But there's new technology.
I've heard zinc. Do you know anything about zinc, Harvey? Excuse me for interrupting you. I'm just wondering what you know about zinc.
The new owner of the LA Times is a billionaire, Patrick Soon-Shi, I think his name is, is developing a nickel hydride battery, which is apparently way more sustainable than the lithium ion. But, you know, Elon Musk is putting out the lithium ion batteries from what is the biggest building in the world, the factory in Nevada. So battery technology is very real, and it stops the intermittency debate. And then, of course, you have the efficiency, the LED, and that whole transition. So you got a four-part, irrefutable, irreducible bottom line here on green power. And that's something we got to stick to, because I know, you know, we know that they're going to come into the Congress and they're going to talk about new nuclear as part of the Green New Deal. And we're going to have to deal with that. That's why I think we have to have a separate organization simultaneous with the attempt to transform the Democratic Party. Russell, did you want to jump in on that?
Not sure that I have anything to add. I'm just, I listen to you on the radio often, and I'm just sort of thinking about that as a notion forward. I think there's many organizations that could emerge. You know, it's interesting. I'm on calls with the United States Climate Action Network, Progressive Democrats of America, and many other groups. And there does seem to be opportunity for some other group to emerge, and perhaps Mr. Siegel has that already in mind. You know, he did formed the Justice Action Mobilization Network, which has as its founding idea this notion of coalition and intersectionality. And perhaps you'll speak to that. What did you have in mind? Like, do you have something, Harvey, that you're imagining, or a historical precedent of the type of organization that you think we should be considering as a model?
Well, Joel, and all three of you are masters. And by the way, congratulations on this victory in North Carolina. It's a big deal. And North Carolina is such an enigma now. You know, you've got a huge progressive community in North Carolina, and then you have these banshee fascists who've taken over the legislature. It's just astounding what's been going on in North Carolina, especially when it comes to voter rights and voter protections. It's amazing.
Mazel
tov, is this, and that's a hillbilly talk, and that so. At any rate, Joel, I think all and Russell and Amanda, I think all sorts of organizations are coming forward. I mean, I'm a polyamorous when it comes to organizations. You know, everybody has a different inclination.
It sounds that way, Harvey. It definitely does.
Yes.
Well,
who do you see, the important...
you or Joel or Russell see one of these organizations? I mean, Russell, you mentioned the Justice Action Mobilization Network. Do you see them as, you know, an organization that can be sort of the hub that's going to pull different organizations together that can, because we need that. I mean, we've seen sort of this infighting and bickering over who's going to lead and know that I'm doing this and know you're doing this. It's just, even on the local level, it's confounded me here, because I work with a lot like you do, not on the national scene, but on the statewide scene, Harvey, with these groups, and they have a real hard time sometimes working together. And I think we need someone that can take the charge and can really sort of lead all these different groups. I believe that. I'm assuming you guys believe we need to have all these different, you know, groups and leaders across the nation coming together in order to get started on this. Is that the way everybody else feels today? Or
You want to jump in on that?
Can you hear me? Okay? Can you hear me? Okay, Harvey.
I can. Yes. So just go ahead and talk as loud as you
That's
can.
That's important. Go for it.
Well,
I can almost hear you, Joel.
And the thing I can definitely hear is that you have
a bit of laryngitis. Been persuading people all week, my friend. Thank you for being there doing the work.
You have to have leaders. That's one thing that Abby Hoffman taught me in the 80s during the divestment campaign is, you know, in the 60s they had leaders. But what I think has to happen is those who've been working on 100% clean energy and we know each other. And you know, this movement is a beloved community. There's so much respect and trust and love that we've engendered over the years. Russell probably, I think, in my opinion, being responsible for 99.9% of it, is we would need to convene literally a committee of people, maybe 8 to 10 leaders that go meet with some members of Congress. And you just got to close the door and then start mapping out the bill. What's the bill going to look like? Then once you draft the bill, this is what John Conyers taught me, you know, this genius of a man who governed for 50 years in the United States Congress, you know, tragic ending, but boy, did I learn a lot from him. Then you have to share the bill with as many organizations as possible and make sure it's their bill. So when you do your Green New Deal, it literally has the buy-in of scores of organizations, elected officials, civil society organizations. Then you're the senior advisor of Greenpeace. You remember saying freeze. It's got to be on that level. But one thing I heard in Congress and when I lobby with Amanda in the General Assembly is the staffers are confused, and they kind of feel like there's, you know, who should we listen to? But so far, Sunrise has been unbelievably effective, and I think Sunrise is integral in all this, but there has to be 8 to 10 people let's call a meeting of the elders, who take that leadership, get on the phone, go fly to a certain place, have a 2-day, you know, meeting, and then go right to Congress and say, we're ready to get moving on this. But there has to be some kind of a name for it, some kind of a network, and you cannot fear stepping on people's toes because the earth is in balance. And I'll just close by saying, this is the first time, at least in my history, as an activist, where how we organize will determine whether or not this planet survives. So there cannot be any ego and power struggles. We need to be a family, because once we do the United States of America, we got to do China, India, Brazil, emerging, developing countries. So it has to be a worldwide movement that's connected to the Greens in Europe. And it really is just a matter of people stepping up. I think Bernie Sanders, if I had to wave my magic wand, I think Bernie Sanders has been successful at bringing together so many different organizations of people. I think Bernie needs to call a meeting of the Green New Deal, and we have to just hash out what this movement is going to look like. And what Amanda and I have noticed is hiring organizers is the biggest challenge right now, is this movement does not have enough money. And the big Greens, thank God they got money, but where we are in North Carolina and other states, we just don't have the money to hire organizers. If you're going to get 100 to 170 co-sponsors on the bill, that's when you get a hearing. We're going to have more organizers and more education. So that's what I think needs to happen. And Russell has a very close relationship to every organization in this country that's been working on this, and Bernie Sanders. But that would be what I think we ought to do. I think Sanders has to call a meeting. Ocasio-Cortez has to be a part of it.
All right, that's good. Well, listen, we're actually getting down to it here. We have yet to talk about Medicare for All. And I did want to get – please, Russell, yes. And if you can segue in to talk about Medicare for All, that'd be great.
Well, actually, I just wanted to just echo a couple of Joel's comments and respond to the question that you had asked, and then to hand it back to you to bring us into the Medicare for All. I just wanted to note that all of us have been working on this for a long time. I've been working on climate for 30 years. And what's shifted now is the activist that is showing up, the Sunrise activist, the climate mobilization activist, Kids Versus Global Warming. There are so many remarkable organizations. These are kids who were 10, not even born yet when we started working on this, who are now showing up with remarkable talent and very clear vision. They're well-funded. They're remarkably capable technologically. And it's a different thing to be saying, I'm going to make sure I leave a planet for future generations, for my daughter, for my grandchildren. It's a different thing to say, I am going to make sure I save my own future. It's their lives they're fighting for. And if you heard them speak when they did the two sit-ins were presented at Pelosi's office, they said to all of us, if you're with us, you're welcome and help us bridge the path forward. Joel's one of the greatest people I've ever encountered to make bridges forward. Otherwise, get out of the way. And so when you ask, we need a new group, what I think is we need a idea by which we will agree and not allow it to in any way decay or diffuse or dilute. And if we can, I think we're in a different time. And with just having that idea as a beacon forward, a Polaris, will allow anybody who is unwilling to play at that level of clarity to be exposed as gradualists and no longer part of the solution. And I think that's going to be the emerging opportunity from this Green New Deal that has been set as the, even before she's sworn into office, she's already moving forward, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, with this. You can feel what's about to explode, and I think that's what's going to change. It's the demands of the young people for their own lives.
Yeah, it seems to me that if Pelosi and the Democratic leadership, the corporate Democrats, are not going to set up this Green New Deal committee, then the Progressive Caucus and whoever else should just set it up on their own
That's exactly.
And I do want to advocate, I've mentioned this on the show before, I mentioned it last week, I also think there should be a peace caucus. And maybe even a women's peace caucus in the, as far from a guy to put this forward, but you know, there are two people in the history of the United States Congress who cast a sole vote against the Americans getting into a war. One of them was Jeanette Rankin. She was elected to the first woman elected to Congress in 1916, and in 1917 she joined 50 other Congress people voting against our entry into World War One. She was not reelected. She was got back to Congress in 1940, and she was the only person, the only member of either house of Congress to vote against going into World War II on December 8th, 1941. Good for her. And then, of course, Barbara Lee cast a sole vote against the war. And I would love to see
a peace caucus or maybe a women's peace caucus in the Congress to get us out of these ridiculous wars. And the same thing with the new Green Deal. And you are organizers, all three of you, of the highest degree. And so, you know, this is a discussion we have to have. Me being more of a writer, I'm just concerned that we have our principles intact. And we make very clear that there's no such thing as clean coal, no acceptable fossil fuel use, none of this stashing the CO2 in the Earth's crust, no pipelines. Somebody's actually proposed a pipeline for CO2 to justify continued operation of coal burners. I mean, it's insane. And, of course, there's no such thing as clean nuclear power. How we get there is another question. I think we're all old enough and have been around enough to know that the craziness will come, and we can't let it drive us crazy. Amanda, do you want to talk about that? And anybody want to jump in on – we only got about 8 minutes left to talk about national health care.
Yeah, so, no, Amanda, I think your 8 minutes Amanda, left please. To talk about national health care is critical, and it's actually partnered with exactly what we're talking about here today. I mean, I think it's all – so I'm glad you included it in this topic, Harvey, because you know, when you look at social justice issues, we're talking about health care for all. That's going to be a critical piece moving forward, and we cannot forget that. We cannot let it fall to the wayside. And I think when you look at, soon-to-be House Majority Leader Nancy Pelosi taking up, you know, those issues that are most important to this new Congress, you know, they don't need to just focus on health care and think that that's exclusive. That covers everything. It covers, you know, social justice issues that run the gamut, and that's both climate change and health care. But that is not my primary issue. We've got the expert on the call today, and Joel Siegel. So that's
okay,
all
Joel,
here.
With your raspy voice, can you give us like a 4-minute sum up on what's happening with national health care?
Yeah, there's consideration of, thank you, Amanda, for what you just said. Representative Jayapal is supposed to reintroduce H.R. 676 was originally John Conyers and Dennis Kucinich's, and literally the movement's bill. I've been working with their office just to make sure that it's absolutely a nonprofit, single-payer Medicare for all system. And it was, in my opinion, it was not heading in that direction. And many of the physicians that we worked with were concerned about that. And I've been meeting with their office. But the reason why this is so important is we're going to spend, this sounds crazy, up to $33 trillion each in about 10 to 12 years if we do not get our health care costs under control. The transition to 100% clean energy will cost about $16 trillion right over about a 20-year period. So the math does not add up. In order for us to transition to 100% clean energy in all energy sectors, you cannot keep spending all this money, and yep. Part of the Green New Deal must be Medicare for all single payer, because we can't keep spending these outrageous, cost of corporate health care. Number two, I think also concomitant to this single payer as part of being a part of the Green New Deal is cutting our military. Mm-hmm. There's generals who've already put, you know, their own military budgets, which cost, you know, it's $780 billion. I think it's about $1.5 trillion when you look at the CIA budget and Homeland Security. The Cold War is over, and there should be a separate, you know, either I think it should be a bill that should be part of the Green New Deal, which says these are the weapon systems that we're gonna not going to have. We're going to bring X amount of troops home. And as much as I do not agree or like Donald Trump, he does say he wants to, you know, bring the troops home, but those got to be integral in the Green New Deal, because at the end of the day, you got to tell Congress how you're going to pay for the Green New Deal, and you have to have budgets and numbers. And there's a lot of think tanks and throughout the country and in D.C. and they're going to have to be part of this Green New Deal committee. That's why I'm excited about the whole proposal.
Okay, before the way the show ends is the music comes on with no warning. So, Russell Green, how do people get a hold of you, and where do you want to direct people? Russell, you still there? Joel?
Oh, yeah, please just go to NorthCarolinaClimateSolutions.org.
NCClimateSolutions.org.
Our website. And or you can go to Joel, J-O-E-L dot R dot Siegel, S-E-G-A-L, at gmail.com. Love to talk to you.
Okay, yeah. Amanda?
Yeah, our website is NCClimateSolutions.org, and you can reach me at Amanda at NCClimateSolutions.org.
Beautiful. Russell Green?
Russell Green is disappeared.
Oh, there you are. Hello? Hello?
I would give his email number, but I better not. If anybody wants to
get
on Russell Green.
We're down to the end here. You guys have been fantastic. We're strategizing on the Green New Deal. It's got to happen. We got to make sure that the content is clear. And above all, along with that, we do have to have universal health care, Medicare for all. I am on Medicare. It's a great system. We're spending way too much money on health care. And obviously, the way to sell Medicare for all is to show how much cheaper it would be for everybody if we had it. And we have, this huge resistance going on. I do want to jump in. You mentioned this, and I'm looking at the New York Times on my screen, that Donald Trump, awful as he is, someone else, another radio station is calling me, actually. If he winds up pulling us out of Afghanistan and Syria, it would be amazing. There you go, right on cue. Thank you.
All righty, Harvey, thank you.
All right, next time I'll send you the URL. Keep in touch.
All righty, thank you.
Take care, everybody. Take care.
We needed when the sun shone down on the